Once upon a time, there lived a 7.5-year-old girl named Wilder, who had an amazing loom in her room. It was invisible to everyone but Wilder herself, who could see it only during the hour before dawn, when she used it to weave beautiful mornings for her mother and father. It had all the usual features of regular looms, such as a shuttle and a bobbin, but it had some unusual features as well. It had a mirror that you worked by turning a key. It had a spider in one corner who made the loom go fast or slow. It had a treehouse that you left by way of a waterfall, and a fireplace whose flames put on puppet shows. It had a drinking fountain that let you take a sip of almost anything. The first time you heard a whippoorwill, or the way it feels to wake up in the morning after it's been snowing at night and keep it inside you all day long. You'll understand that it was a magic loom when I tell you that even though she wove in the dark, there was always plenty of light to see by. And whatever kind of light you wanted, sunlight, moonlight, the faintest starlight, candlelight for weaving soft colors to start the day, a flashlight beam for making small pathways through the end of night. The threads on Wilder's loom were all the voices of morning, light and air and water and one color gradually becoming another. As she wove, though she never left her room, she rose up over her neighborhood until she saw both near and far. Sometimes it was like flying, as she buzzed the little river that laced up her town, and sometimes it was as though she were sitting on a pillow in the middle of the air and the earth was turning the town beneath her, showing her the lives of friends and strangers and all the small creatures who share our world. She saw the morning just before it happened, when the morning was newer than new, and she touched her loom in the cleverest ways to help it come truer than true. She trusted the magic of her loom in the morning, just as she trusted her mother and father, and never asked how it worked. It was magic, and she was Wilder, and that was that. She heard the hobo before she ever saw him. Into the stillness of the morning she was weaving came the sound of a train whistle. It made her feel like things from far away were almost here, and others she had always known were setting out on journeys. Under the train whistle, when she leaned her head down and listened deeply, she heard a violin. Under the violin was the jingly clink of a tambourine, and then the going-away sound of a harmonica riding the wind of the train's passing and tangling in the smoke from the engine. Then the train was gone, on to other towns, and Wilder returned to weaving a morning as beautiful as the first there ever was. In the following weeks, every now and then, she heard the violin again, always under the train whistle, and under the violin the tambourine, and then the harmonica, like the way train smoke would sound if it had a voice. One day, when she finished her weaving early, she loom flew to the small railroad depot near the center of town. Though she loved watching the passenger trains pulling in, the excited faces of the people getting on and the tired but happy faces of those getting off, she didn't hear a single violin. So she drifted down the tracks a ways to the freight yard. No train stopped there that day, but she kept trying, and on the third day a train did stop to take on water and produce. Wilder loom flew over the boxcars until she came to one with its door partway open and a pair of travelers sitting on the floor together looking out. The first was a man in old clothes. The second was a goat wearing a straw hat with two holes cut in it for his horns. The man was playing a violin and the goat was playing a tambourine by taking it in his teeth and shaking his head. The man paused, took the tambourine away from the goat, and snugged it down tight over his companion's straw hat where it fit like a jingly crown. Then he held a harmonica up to the goat. Wilder had heard that goats will eat almost anything. Was this goat going to eat the harmonica? No, he took it in his mouth and played by bleating into it. Wilder thought the man and the goat played beautifully together. Her father had told her stories that his father's father had told him about a time long ago when many men who were out of work took to jumping into empty boxcars and crossing the country in search of jobs. They were poor and hungry and had no other way to travel. They were called hobos, and going from place to place on freight trains was known as riding the rails. Now, her father said, a lot of people were out of work again. So for the first time in a long time, there were hobos riding the rails from town to town. She wished she knew this hobo's name. Of all the musical instruments, the violin had always been her favorite. She didn't have to wonder long what the goat was called. As the great diesel engine roared and harrumphed its way back to life and Wilder swam through the smoke streaming back from the engine, she heard the hobo say, "How about it, Ulysses? Shall we say our goodbyes to this fine little town with a tune?" He fitted the violin between his shoulder and chin and drew the bow across the strings. Ulysses made the harmonica sing, "So long, so long, so long." The music floating back from the hobo's fiddle made Wilder feel like the violin was the true engine of the train, and as long as the locomotive was powered by music, it would bring the two friends back to her. Afterwards, she didn't remember anything else about that morning, only the long whistle of the train, the half-open door of the boxcar with two faces looking out, and the music made by a man and an animal getting caught in the train smoke and blowing away as the train went around the bend. One morning, loom flying a week later, she saw Ulysses down at the freight yard by himself, standing in front of the tracks in his straw hat with its tambourine crown, shaking his head jingly-clink at the boxcars thundering by. When the train had passed, Ulysses kept standing there, shaking his head. Finally, two large men in railroad uniforms ran toward him, waving their arms, and he took off, heading for the center of town. She worried that Ulysses and the hobo had no one but each other, and now they might be separated forever. She didn't like to think of them alone when the night was coming. She didn't think a hobo would put a collar with a tag on a goat the way you would a dog. For one thing, hobos have no address or phone number, so what would it say on the tag? Then, for a week, wherever Wilder went, loom flying, there was Ulysses. Jingly clink at the hardware store, jingly clink down by the creek, and you'd think he'd been adopted by the whole town. At the back of the bakery, he stuffed himself on day-old cream puffs. Leftover pizza was served at the Italian place. At the barbecue shack, he barely nibbled on a spare rib but lapped up extra sauce. At the ice cream parlor, his favorite flavor was mint chocolate chip. He was treated to Mexican food and Chinese food. He chewed up the fortune cookie without reading his fortune, but it probably said he would be eating many new kinds of food. At the drive-through window, he shook out the burgers but gobbled the buns. When a driver offered him French fries, he ate the box but ignored the fries, then topped off a coffee cake by devouring two apple pies. By then, he hardly had room for a bucket of mangoes and papayas at the fruit stand. Wilder thought she might like to be a goat when she grew up. He was having fun now, but Wilder knew that Ulysses would eventually be rounded up and taken away. Could she lead him to her house? She had remembered most of the time to feed her turtle, but hadn't yet proved she was ready to take care of a puppy. Her parents would never let her have a goat. Besides, Ulysses belonged with his friend, the hobo. Seeing the country, making music, riding the rails. What if she found a way for both of them to visit her at the same time? She thought she knew how to get the hobo to her house if he came through town again, and once he was there, if he played his violin and Ulysses was still in the neighborhood, the goat was bound to follow. She would need help not only from her loom, but from her toy chest, too. Somewhere in there, under books and blocks and bubble mix, under pinwheels and puzzles and penguins, under nighties and necklaces and nesting dolls, under ducks and dragons and dancing shoes, under trumpets and tiaras and tea sets, under French horns and frisbees and ribbiting frogs, under jump ropes and jacks and giraffes, under race cars and ribbons and rain sticks, under stethoscopes and star maps and sidewalk chalks, under monkeys and slinkies and blankies from when she was young, she had a tambourine of her very own. The next morning at her loom, she watched the boxcars rolling through the freight yard. No train stopped that day or the day after. On the third morning, however, as a long line of boxcars began to slow in the yard, she was pretty sure that under the hooting of the whistle, she heard the lonesome sound of a violin. As soon as she had helped her parents to wake up happily by weaving them a morning like no other and running into their room to show them how fine a way it was to start the day, she said to her mother, "It looks like it's going to be awful hot today, Mama. Would it be okay if I set up my lemonade stand?" "Of course, Wilder, will help you save money." She dropped her voice to a whisper. "I think your daddy's almost ready to let you buy that puppy." "Okay, Mama. Mrs. Cesaretti told me that I could pick all the lemons I wanted off their tree. That way I'll save even more money. I'll be right back." Both her parents laughed because Wilder always said she would be right back. Whether she was going into the kitchen for a glass of water or over to her best friend's for a sleepover, her father said that if she ever sailed around the world, just before going out the door, she would say she'd be right back. Wilder grabbed her backpack and raced out of the house. Her loom hadn't shown the hobo getting off the train. That part would be up to Wilder and her tambourine. At the back of her mother's friend's house, she filled her backpack with lemons and remembered to leave a thank you note on the Cesaretti's front porch. She didn't have time for a proper visit. Wilder wasn't allowed to go into the freight yard without her parents. But there was a park across the street where she often played. When the train slowed down and braked to a halt, as she had seen on her loom that it would, and the door of a boxcar had opened with a rusty groan, she saw the hobo and ducked down behind a statue. She shook and banged the tambourine, trying to sound like a lonely, wandering goat. Could the hobo hear her from way over there? She was afraid to look, but as long as he didn't know the music was coming from her, it was all right. She poked her head out and peeked at the boxcar. He was climbing down with a violin case in his hand. He was walking toward the sound of the tambourine. She ran ahead of the hobo, jingly clinking with all her might. She didn't play as well as Ulysses, but she would get better with practice. She cut across vacant lots, dashed down alleys and slipped through backyards. She kept just far enough ahead of him that he couldn't see her, but could still hear the music. When she noticed a group of children about her age walking with her parents toward the library for story time, she hid among them, holding her tambourine down low and shaking it. When the others went in the building, she kept going down the sidewalk. It was still working. He was coming closer. Now she really had to hurry. Tambourining as she ran, Wilder sprinted down her street and through the gate into her front yard. She grabbed the carton and chair for her lemonade stand out of the garage and set them up on the sidewalk at the end of the driveway. She shook her tambourine one more time and put it away under the carton. She was spreading a white tablecloth and setting out the pitcher, lemons, lemon squeezer, sugar, glasses, and spoons, when she saw the hobo coming around the corner and down her street, following the jingly clink. Ice cubes! They were her secret ingredient. She ran in the front door and through the kitchen and back out so fast. Her mother said later that she didn't see her, just heard the ice cubes go rattling by in a bowl. When the hobo approached her house, walking slowly now that there was no more tambourine music to follow, and looking around in a discouraged sort of way, Wilder concentrated on slicing and squeezing the lemons. She didn't look up until she heard his voice. "Excuse me, miss, I don't suppose you've seen a goat go by in the last few minutes by any chance?"
"Good morning, sir," she said, just as she'd been taught.
"No, I would have noticed a goat. We have dogs and cats, and sometimes I see badgers and turkeys and skunks and deer. Once in a while a raccoon breaks into our garage and eats a whole bag of my kitty's kibble. But I don't believe I've ever seen a goat on the street, and I've lived here all my life."
"I could have sworn I heard him," said the hobo.
He had kind eyes with a lot of crinkly lines around them, and a smile that Wilder thought was beautiful, even though it was missing a few teeth.
"Why don't you sit and rest a while with a glass of ice-cold lemonade?" Wilder asked.
The hobo did look hot. He pulled off a bandana he'd been wearing around his neck and mopped his face with it.
"I'm afraid I don't have another chair. You could use mine."
"Oh, that's all right, miss. I'll just sit on my fiddle case." And so he did. "Your sign says that lemonade costs 50 cents. I'm afraid I couldn't afford a single sip unless your father and mother have some work I could do for you."
"That's a good idea," said Wilder. "But first, let's have some lemonade. This one's on the house."
She knew that meant it was free.
"My name's Wilder. What's yours?"
"You can call me Homer the Hobo, or just Homer," he said. "Say, this is mighty tasty lemonade. Did you make it yourself?"
"Yes," said Wilder. "Did you notice that it's kind of fizzy? That's because I make the ice cubes from water with bubbles in it. That's my secret."
"Have you lost your goat?" "I'm afraid so," said Homer, and Wilder quickly refilled his glass to keep him talking. "We were passing through here some days ago, and when the train stopped, I got off to fill Ulysses' water dish. When I got back, he was gone. He left me his harmonica, but it's kind of confusing trying to play it at the same time as my fiddle here, so I stuck it in my pocket to save for him." He pulled it out and blew a few notes, looking around as though Ulysses might jump out of Wilder's mailbox.
"He might have gone off to follow a tamale cart. That happened one time in New Mexico. Another time down in Florida, he took a liking to a nanny goat passing by, and I figured he was going to settle down and start a family. Once in Michigan, he trailed a garbage truck for a mile or two, but he came back an hour or so later. He's always come back before. But this time I waited in the freight yard until those fellows in the uniforms told me to move along."
"Have Ulysses and yourself done a lot of traveling together, Homer?" asked Wilder.
"Oh, my, yes. Ever since he was a kid like you. He's about full grown now. Pretty nearly everywhere the train tracks run, we've been there. We've had a fine time. You couldn't ask for a better traveling companion. And I picked up a lot of information about goats along the way."
"Goats come from even more places than Ulysses and I have been. There are Irish goats, Spanish goats, Russian goats, goats from the Canary Islands, Australian goats, Finnish goats, Swedish goats, Hungarian goats, red goats from the Kalahari in South Africa, and little pygmy goats from Cameroon in West Africa. There's even a goat called a fainting goat that faints dead away for about 10 seconds when it's startled. I suppose you could make a map of the world just by marking all the places where goats come from."
"What kind of goat is Ulysses, Homer?"
"Oh, I suppose he's just a mutt like me," Homer laughed.
We're a musical couple of mutts, though. He couldn't play a lick when we started out, but now he does a swell job on harmonica and tambourine. That's why I thought you might have seen or heard him. He carries his tambourine around with him and plays it as he goes. She decided to invite Homer in and ask her father if there were any jobs around the yard the hobo could do. He needed the money, and as long as they stayed on the sidewalk, Homer would be sitting on his violin case, and that wasn't part of her plan. Both of her parents were in the backyard, her mother weeding her vegetable garden and her father pruning his rose bushes. She introduced them to Homer and explained that he was looking for his missing goat.
"It's good to meet you, Homer," said her father. "Where do you suppose he went?"
"Hard to say," said Homer. "One time, near Santa Barbara, some kids on bicycles gave him a bag of tortilla chips, so we followed them down to the beach. He'd never seen the ocean before. When I found him, he was up to his whiskers in the surf, just watching the waves roll in. Another time, down in New Orleans, he fell in with a Mardi Gras band. His tambourine was just what they needed. But when he started eating the bass drum, they kicked him out of the band."
Wilder told her father about Homer's offer.
"Your timing couldn't be better. I was just about to tackle those blackberry vines," said Wilder's father.
Wilder and her mother looked at each other but didn't say anything. They both knew that her father would rather move to another house than go near the blackberry vines. They had terrible thorns and had taken over half the backyard. The last time he had tried to cut them down wearing thick gloves and coveralls and work boots, he had still come back into the house covered with cuts, and her mother had said Wilder should never repeat the names her father was calling the blackberry vines.
"Homer here is just the man for the job," said Wilder.
She looked at her mother and pointed behind her hand to Homer's violin case. Her mother shook Homer's hand and asked him to sit at the table under the big umbrella and take some more lemonade.
"There's plenty of time to do yard work," she said. "Perhaps you wouldn't mind favoring us first with a tune on your violin."
Wilder ran into the kitchen and made two more pitchers of her special lemonade. She took one out to her stand and set it out along with a cigar box for money and a sign that read self-service. The second pitcher she carried to the gathering in the backyard. As the afternoon wore on, Homer must have played a tune from every place where goats could be found, slow pieces that made you sad even if you didn't quite know why, and faster ones that made you so glad you wanted to jump around in a jig and run through the sprinklers like your hair was on fire. He never did get around to the blackberry vines. Between songs, he told them stories of his travels with Ulysses and all the good people they had met along the way, but there was no sign of the missing goat. "Did you teach yourself to play, Homer?" asked Wilder's mother.
"Oh, no, I studied at a fancy music school as a much younger man, and I had a job playing in an orchestra. But there was too much dressing up and much too much sitting around. I wanted to see the world."
"How did you and Ulysses meet?" asked Wilder. Homer said,
"I was sitting around the campfire one night in a hobo jungle up in Wyoming. A hobo jungle is a place where some of us fellows hold campouts. And this tiny kid goat, no bigger than a couple of washcloths tied together, walked out of the dark and started bleating at my old fiddle here like he was trying to perform a duet. None of the fellows had any idea where his mother was. I looked all around there, and the kid kept bleating for her, but we never did find her. I expect she was struck by a train. I thought I'd give him to a farming family with kids of their own to raise him, but by the time I'd given up looking for his mom, we'd become good pals. So I've been his mother ever since, and he's been my little brother."
"Can I hop a freight when I get older, Mama?" Her mother always took Wilder's question seriously. She thought about this one for a moment and said, "By the time you're old enough to hop a freight, Boo, you'll probably want to do something else." The music had made Wilder feel like adventures were headed her way, but when it was over, she felt a little down. Even with the help of her loom, her toy chest, and her lemonade stand, she had failed to bring Homer the hobo and Ulysses the goat back together. "Homer," she said, "that's about the loveliest concert I've ever attended. Could we pay you for playing the violin for us?" The money she had saved running her lemonade stand over the summer might help Homer stick around to look for Ulysses for a while. She couldn't think of any other way. "Why, thank you, miss, but I couldn't take money for playing music. Songs just belong to whoever can hear them. That's one of the reasons I've loved riding the rails with Ulysses all these years. I feel like the music we make blows back and lands in people's lives. Then, when we return, our music has been there before us. Most folks seem pretty happy to see us anyhow, and maybe that's why." He struck up a lively dance number, and her father whirled her mother around on the grass. As Homer had been speaking, Wilder had been daydreaming about riding around the country with him and Ulysses, taking violin lessons as the train barreled down the tracks, carrying them to far-off destinations. Was it her imagination, or were the blackberry vines starting to vanish without any effort on the part of Homer or her father? Could Homer be doing it with his violin? Every note taking a bite out of the gnarly vines? For that's how it seemed to Wilder, that note by note she could see a little more of the lawn. Wilder had a magic loom, so why couldn't Homer have a fiddle that did yard work? It must have been a special fiddle, because as the hobo played and Wilder's mother and father danced across the grass with their eyes closed and Wilder watched the vines vanishing little by little, Homer's fiddle said, "Jingly-clink." Surely she'd been mistaken, because then it sounded like a violin again, and then like a fiddle and a tambourine. Homer's bow froze on the string. He, too, had heard something curious among the blackberries. When the music stopped, her parents stopped dancing, and everyone looked at the forest of brambles. Two horns, followed by a beat-up straw hat, poked above the vines.
"Ulysses!" cried Homer. "You didn't need me to tackle those vines," he said to Wilder's father. "You already hired my goat."
Indeed, Ulysses was eating them down to the ground, terrible thorns and all. Wilder's father gave her a funny look. "You don't happen to know how Ulysses came to be here, do you, Missy?" he asked. "No, Daddy," she said, because her loom was an even bigger secret than her ice cube recipe. "I guess he likes blackberries."
"Well," said Homer, "he must be starving, judging by the way he's digging into them."
"Oh, I don't know," said Wilder. "He looks pretty well fed to me."
She thought she would wait until the next time the vines took over their backyard, and then ask her father for a goat. Her father insisted on paying Homer because the backyard had, after all, been rid of the menace. Her mother invited Homer to stay for dinner, but he said he had a train to catch. So her mother, who had washed and dried the hobo's bandana, wrapped two sandwiches in it, and her father offered to drive Homer and Ulysses to the freight yard, and Wilder could come too.
"We should give you two a musical farewell," her father said to Homer.
"Wilder has a tambourine around here somewhere herself, don't you, honey?"
"I think so," said Wilder. "Let me go look. I'll be right back."
Her father didn't seem overly concerned about driving around with a goat in the car, but Wilder insisted on Ulysses wearing a seatbelt. When they got to the freight yard, Wilder thought they would drop off Homer and Ulysses and be on their way. But her dad had a surprise for her. After Homer climbed and Ulysses leaped up into a boxcar, he lifted her up to the hobo and stood nearby watching a baseball game on his telephone. There in the cool of the rusty old car with the low evening sun slanting in, she received her first violin lesson. Ulysses himself probably could have played the fiddle better, hooves and all. but she was happy just to sit with the two of them, scraping and squealing out a few yowly sounds more like complaints than music. She picked up her tambourine when Homer took over on fiddle, and Ulysses blew some wild, goaty harmonica. Had such a trio ever been heard before? The man with his long white hair pulled back in a ponytail, the goat with his little beard, straw hat and mouth harp, and the 7.5-year-old girl with her pink backpack, her own crazy curly hair and a grin that could outdazzle the setting sun. When the whistle sounded that meant the train was about to pull out, Wilder gave Homer a hug, scratched Ulysses behind his ears, and jumped down into her father's arms.
"Goodbye, Wilder," Homer called out. "Keep making music. Next time I see you, we'll play all day. Meanwhile, I'll send you a hair from Ulysses' beard."
Wilder waved and waved and waved. She didn't stop waving until even the smoke had disappeared. Driving back home with her father, Wilder thought to ask him the question she had already asked her mother.
"Daddy, can I hop a freight when I'm older?"
"Ask me again when you're older," he said. "I might go with you." Every morning after that, Wilder looked in vain for Homer the hobo and Ulysses the goat as she worked her amazing loom. She strained her ears for the music made by a man and an animal, but for now, the train whistle played alone. Maybe, when she was older, she thought, and had a little girl of her own, one morning her daughter would hear the lonesome sound of a violin and know it for the true engine of a train coming round the bend. Until then, she would always hope that a locomotive, powered by music, would bring the two friends back to her again. The end.